there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. It's actually Election Day, Tuesday, November 6th, and so I have a great bonus episode for you because we're going to talk about sustainability. And so from Glory Bee, which is a awesome company in Eugene, Oregon, here today to talk to us is Shandy Carroll. So welcome to the show, Shandy.
Thank you for having me. I know it is election day, and I have my mail-in ballot in my purse ready to go after this, so I'm excited to go do that, and then I can wear the sticker around the rest of the day.
You said in the pre-chat, you mentioned you're not actually in Eugene. You get to work remotely from California. So I do always kind of like start the show out asking about like, what was your very first gardening experience? Like, were you a kid or were you an adult? Like, even though we're going to talk about bees today, like we could still talk about like, or maybe you've never gardened, but I don't know. Did you ever like have a garden like with your grandparents or as an adult? Or like, when was your first garden experience?
Yeah, I actually grew up in New Zealand.
Bit of an accent.
I live there. Do I? Yeah. Apparently my sentence structure is a little bit British colony, which I don't really know what that means, but so I grew up in New Zealand in a fairly rural part. It's actually a town famous for its diving and fishing, but I grew up on a nice area with a nice big garden and overlooking the ocean. It was really beautiful, and the great thing about that spot was we could just grow whatever we wanted. It's pretty temperate. It's located at 34 degrees south on the coast, so you know, we'd have tomatoes and carrots and lettuce and kale and all these things, which meant my mother didn't have to drive 30 minutes into the supermarket too often, and we just had a really sort of fun kitchen garden. And that was my first experience with it. I will true confessions and admit I live in an apartment now, and so my garden is some basil that is quite sad and some succulents that are doing pretty well because I ignore them. I would admire folks who are able to garden, and I really admire my neighbors who have these amazing apartment balcony gardens that are just incredible, and one day I will get there.
Awesome. Well, there's always time. So, and that's usually about what I have is a basil plant in my garden. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm just going to ask you off the recorder really quick. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're in a restaurant. Are there like, there's people really loud talking in the background?
Yeah. Let me see if I can move to a quieter spot.
That seems good.
Okay, this is good. I found a quiet spot here. Awesome. Yeah, okay, excellent. Okay, so sorry about that.
No worries. So tell us about Glory Bee.
Yeah, Glory Bee is a family-owned company in Eugene, Oregon. It's been in business since 1976. And I've worked there for the last 5 years as their sustainability manager. Our main products are, there's a dog in the background.
That's fine.
Our main products at Glory Bee are natural food ingredients. So about 30% honey and a big portion of nuts and grains, flours, sweeteners, things like agave and molasses. And then once a year, we bring in bees. We have a partner who's a bee breeder, and we bring in bees, and we have a whole big event where we introduce our customers to these bees. We sell them their nukes and their hives, and then we have a whole educational program around these bees as well.
And But that you don't have to be coming just for the bees, right? Like anybody can come that wants to learn about how to care for bees, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anybody can come to the event. It is in Eugene, Oregon. And it's a great event where we've got food trucks and music and try to have lots of vendors that can talk about bee-friendly gardening and bee-friendly practices.
All right. Well, that's a perfect segue into let's talk about some bee-friendly practices and what was the other thing you said?
Let's see, bee-friendly gardening and bee-friendly practices that you can have in your own life, really.
Okay, perfect. So let's talk mm-hmm. about what are some of those.
Yeah, well, I mean, so for folks like myself, where I don't have a garden, but I do live in a apartment complex. So, I mean, the easiest thing is just to have a little side conversation with the property manager and say, hey, can we make sure that we're not putting harmful pesticides on the flowers? And that's important too, because like I have a pet and I have friends with kids who come and visit. I really don't want harmful pesticides sprayed around my home. And then on like a bigger scale, the products that are pollinated by bees are best to be organic for the bees. So sometimes that's really easy to do. Like where I live, avocados are pollinated by bees. Organic avocados cost like 10 cents more, and it's so much better for the bees and the environment. Same with like organic almonds. They're better for the bees and the environment.
What about almonds and bees in the environment? Like my husband's always concerned about like how much water the almond trees use in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is concerning. And I live in California, so I see where they've had to pull out almonds because it's almond plantations because of the water. There just isn't enough water here for that sort of agriculture sometimes. They've put in a lot of, sorry, there's a bunch of cars driving past now. Okay. So for the almonds, they've put in a lot of really water friendly, water saving practices. So most of the existing almond plantations in California now have drip irrigation instead of flood irrigation. And that's because the price of water is going up, and it just makes business sense for these farms to really put in those practices. And then sometimes folks use that as an excuse not to eat almonds and meat or cheese. And that's absolutely okay. But the amount of water that goes into producing, you know, a pound of almonds versus just a pound of meat or a pound of cheese, it's disproportionate. So much less water goes into producing a pound of almonds, a pound of meat. And it's really easy sometimes to get hung up on kind of the popular boogeyman without seeing the big picture, which is we do need to eat, and eating locally as close to your home as possible and as much plants and vegetables as possible is the biggest environmental impact we can have.
Cool. Well, that's why we also wonder, because we don't have almonds in our backyard, but so we do try to, like, that's where I've been like going kind of back and forth with this whole vegan thing. I'm like, I mean, mm-hmm. would it be better for me to have a local cow, like a cat, like we actually had a cow here, or supporting my local, like somebody who has a cow and sells local milk, or like my mom's been buying goat cheese from Bozeman in her local grocery store, which Bozeman is right near us in Montana. So it's interesting that she's finding that all the way in New York. So I kind of, you know, go back and forth there. But anyway, so what other bee-friendly gardening tips can you share with us?
Yeah, so with gardening, like if you have a garden on site and you can do some good things for the bees, it's keep a lookout for any sort of pesticide that has a neonicotinoid in it. And those are particularly harmful to bees and best avoided completely. And a lot of states are putting in legislation now to actually clearly state that on the label and say this is harmful to bees, known to be harmful to bees. But that's the main ingredient, is a neonicotinoid ingredient. And what it does is it gets the bees, it's kind of like sugary candy to the bees, and they get so excited by that one thing that they don't go and eat some other pollen and try some diversity in their diet. And they, just like anybody, if they eat too much sugar, they slowly starve to death, unfortunately. So having a garden that avoids neonicotinoid pesticides is the most important thing. And then if there are other insecticides that you really have to use, only use them when the flowers are not flowering, there are no flowers. And then if you really, really have to use them and there are flowers, only use them when the bees are not visiting those plants. So at night, and not on the flowers, really topical applications. But
What's that
the
mean,
main
really topical applications?
really
Like down
topical
in the dirt
application.
or
I
in
know that's like a word I
the
read a
leaves?
lot. So let me think about what that actually means. I think that means you spray on the dirt and not on the flower. Or if you have like bugs on a leaf, like you spray the leaf and not the, yeah. But the I mean the main thing and where most folks are happy in their own gardens is to avoid those pesticides that will
Yeah.
harm the bees in any way, and find a different, like essential oil or coffee grounds or other ways to keep pests out of their gardens.
Cool. How about ways to encourage bees to go to your garden?
Yeah, that's really the fun thing about bee-friendly gardening is it's a way of having flowers throughout the season, and planting gardens that will flower and attract bees starting as early in the season as possible, and then going as late into the season as possible, and giving, particularly if you're somewhere where it gets really cold in the winter, giving those bees a really good pollen source all season long, from just early spring through to late summer. And I've got to say I'm not an expert on what flowers when, but I do know that a lot of herbs will flower early, and then sort of like the seasonal flowering fruits and vegetables that come later in the season. And that is the edge of my gardening knowledge, I will tell you.
Yeah, but that's true. Like my chives are the very first things that open after the dandelions in the spring, and then from there it's kind of like then the oregano, and yeah, herbs are definitely early bloomers. And what I love about herbs is usually they're pretty easy to grow. Like you plant them and then they come back, you know, they're perennials and they tend to take little at least for me. Now, I was talking to somebody the other day in California who was saying because it was so dry where she was, it was really hard to keep herbs growing. And she had a lot of succulents like you do.
The bees are, I think they visit my succulents, but they're not as into them as the bees seem to love lavender, and they love like the sunflowers and sort of different, more colorful plants than my succulents.
Sure. Do your succulents bloom at different times of the year, though?
I can't tell. So some of them do, but they're such a microclimate that I don't know if it's just gotten really hot in that part of my porch and that's why they've bloomed, or I don't know. If you have a source for an expert on succulents, that would be interesting.
I do.
You do? Oh, good.
Her name, let me find her website, is Nell Foster. And she was like one of the first people I interviewed, and I think I didn't even know what a succulent was at the time, truth be told.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because, which is like crazy, because my mom, so her website's Joy Us Garden, like Joyous Garden, but Joy Us Garden, like JoyUsGarden, and she has a great blog about, and she's really active on Twitter, because that's how I first found her,
Oh, neat.
about and she's in Santa Barbara, that's where she's at.
Oh,
So
fantastic.
she's got all sorts of answers about succulents. My mom, oh, that's what I was saying. My mom has like a million succulents. When I was just the last time I was in New York, I was like, wow, I never realized how many of these plants you have everywhere. Her house is really, she has as many plants indoors almost compared to like my house. I have very few house plants. We could use some house plants, but I felt like when I was at my mom's last time I was there, I felt like I could breathe better in her house just because she had so many plants growing.
Yeah, I love house plants. I really have trouble keeping them alive. I think it takes a little more concentration than I give it.
Well, I can understand that. So, anything else you want to tell us about why people would go to Glory Bee? Do you want to talk about any of the products they have for sale? Or is there anything I've skipped?
No, I mean I'm the sustainability manager at Glory Bee, so I love our products and I enjoy them. And they're available online, so if anybody does want to go there. But the things I'm really excited about at Glory Bee is it's a family company, so they're able to really act independently, which is neat as an employee of the company. It's neat to work there because management can decide to do things like start a program called Save the Bee, and then we have 4 hours
The
of
Save
paid.
the Bee program?
Oh, so Save the Bee is a social initiatives program that we started at Glory Bee in 2012, and it's our way of trying to help prevent colony collapse disorder and save honeybees. And it started because our founder is he's a beekeeper. He started as a beekeeper. He had up to 300 hives when he started,
Wow.
and then as the company grew, he stopped keeping hives and put his effort into the company. But a lot of his friends are still beekeepers, and then now his son, who is our current president, is a beekeeper, and they're expert beekeepers, and they still lose about half their hives every winter. And they're just so upset by this. It's really upsetting to go out in the spring and find that half your hives are gone. And so they started this program of, what can we do to save bees? And decided that really the best way to save bees is to fund scientific research, fund outreach and education, for particularly backyard beekeepers and backyard gardeners. And support any kind of legislation that just makes a lot of sense, like putting labels on commercially or privately available pesticides that harm bees, just so people know what they're spraying in their homes.
Putting labels on privately, products that are available that harm bees. What else? You were talking about legislation that makes sense. What other legislation would make sense?
Well, that's the
The
main
big
one.
one.
There's other legislation around supporting organic agriculture and smallholder farms in the United States, and then also smallholder businesses like beekeeping is a business that it's important, and sometimes I write letters towards because. It's hard. It's hard to be a beekeeper in the United States, and it's important because most of our honey now has to be imported from overseas, and that's harmful to the environment, and it's just also kind of a bummer because Beekeeping is this incredible American tradition. And it's hard because folks lose half their hives.
Do they know why people are losing half their hives? Is it because of all the pesticides and chemicals that we're putting on the planet? I mean, they didn't used to lose half their hives, right?
It's between, so a commercial beekeeper will lose about 35% of their hives. And some are less and some are more. And then a backyard beekeeper will lose 50%. And so part of the reason that folks are losing their hives is around that learning curve. So there, if you're new on the learning curve, you're more likely to lose a hive. And that's just being really familiar with the bees. But then the baseline, that 35% of really experienced beekeepers are still losing their hives. And that's because they're visiting these neonicotinoid pesticide crops and crops that have neonicotinoid pesticides on them, and that is getting the bees so focused on one type of pollen that they're not getting their nutritional needs met from lots of different pollens, and they're not coming back to the hive and being really strong because they've eaten lots of different pollens, but they've only eaten the one pollen that tastes really good because it's got the neonicotinoid on it. So it's like feeding bees junk food. And they're not as healthy going into the winter, and then they don't always make it.
How interesting.
Isn't it? Yeah. The same goes for monocropping. It's the same problem. So it is with the almond populations and plantations in California. If the bees are only visiting almonds and not getting some other protein mixed in there from different pollen, they go into the winter weaker and are less able to survive.
All right. Anything else that you wanted to tell us about the sustainability part?
No, you know, that those really, oh, actually I got one more thing that I think is really just awesome. And that's, we get to work as employees. We get to do 4 hours of paid community service, and we normally do it with a program called School Garden Project. And I think that's an Oregon specific program, but a lot of counties have, school garden projects, and it is so much fun to see like the kids out there in the garden, and they're learning, and then us grown-ups as volunteers get to learn too, but they're learning how to you know, pick off snails and plant different plants in configurations so that they help each other and don't hurt each other, and it's really fun. And so anything that can help support these school garden projects for kids, I just think is the coolest thing ever.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm big on that. And there's a big farm to school network that's like throughout the United States going right now. So mm-hmm. It could be through that, but yeah. It could be through a different program in Oregon itself.
Yeah, I think there's several. Well, there's Food Corps too.
Yeah,
and then there's just that really neat program in the Bronx, and he's really active on social media. It's called Green Bronx Machine.
I know. I've reached out to him to see if I can get him on the show.
Yeah,
I think he's just so busy.
Yeah, he came and spoke at a conference I was at about 4 years ago, and it was electrifying because he also, you know, he showed us lots of before and after pictures, including one of himself where, you know, his own diet had changed, and he was happy to have access to more fruits and vegetables, and his health was better, and he had better energy, and, you know, it was really, really inspiring.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, tell everybody what your website is again.
www.glorybee.com, and that's GLORYBEE B-E-E.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing with us today, Shandy. And I hope if listeners will reach out to you or if they have any questions, and maybe they'll want to go to the B-Day in April, or maybe they'll
Absolutely.
just want to get some products for people, maybe for Christmas or for themselves, and just have a great election day.
All right, thank you. And you too. Thank you for taking time to talk with me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing with us. FreeGardenCourse.com. Mike and I have developed some lessons to help you create your very own organic oasis. We'll guide you through the steps to build your perfect natural landscape, an edible earth-friendly yard, a sustainable deep-bed garden, or even start a small profitable market farm. We'll show you how to save time, lower your produce bill, collect usable data, eat healthy, nutritious food with minimal labor, use the most effective and efficient production methods currently being used in backyard gardens as well as market farms, and maybe even help you find some profitable markets. We've designed it to save you time, lower your produce bill, and help you eat healthy, nutritious food. There's checklists, there's outside reading, video assignments. You can join the online Facebook community where there's lots of people from around the world to help you get your garden started today. So remember, freegardencourse.com. Hey there, green future growers. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.